Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Barack Obama has worked hard to transcend race on the campaign trail. American and personal history have intervened. Yesterday in Philadelphia, in a speech hailed as historic, Obama squarely addressed race and asked the country to follow him forward.
I have asserted a firm conviction, a conviction rooted in my faith in God and my faith in the American people, that working together, we can move beyond some of our old racial wounds, and that in fact, we have no choice. We have no choice if we are to continue on the path of a more perfect union.
We have no choice. That speech was, in part of necessity, a politician's artful handling of a thorny campaign moment. There's no way around that. But it was also a straight-on addressing of where this country stands today on race and class, and it was bracing stuff. This hour on Point, Barack Obama's stand on race in America. You can join the conversation. Did you hear it? Did the Obama speech say big, true things to you about Americans, white and black, who they are and who they want to be? Was it a watershed moment or a campaign flash in the pan? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We want to dig deep and thoughtfully today into the message Obama delivered yesterday with an interesting group of people. Joining me first today from Atlanta is Andrew Young, former ambassador to the United Nations, former mayor of Atlanta, former friend and ally of Reverend Martin Luther King, and now we should add a friend and political ally of Hillary Rodham Clinton. Andy Young, thank you very much for being with us today.
Very good to be with you.
Joining us from Phoenix, Arizona is Anna DeVere Smith. She's a playwright and professor at NYU's Tisch School for the Arts and Department of Art and Public Policy. Anna DeVere Smith, thank you very much for joining our conversation.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Our own Jack Beatty will be with us in a moment. Later in the hour, we'll talk with Whit Ayers, Republican, watching what's going on with Obama and this moment on the campaign trail and looking ahead as well. But Andrew Young, let me turn first to you. Here we are, a day after Obama's big speech. You've seen a lot in the civil rights movement. You've spent a lifetime in this conversation. Did Barack Obama move the American conversation yesterday?
I think Barack Obama made a brilliant speech, and I think it was very personal, and I think he let the nation and the world know where he stood, and I frankly like where he stands. I think, though, that we still have a long way to go. When you listen to the commentary, Newt Gingrich on one hand, it's all negative, it's all phony. They wanted to focus on Reverend Jeremiah Wright and not Obama.
Yes.
The thing that I think America has to realize is that what we have to do to deal with our differences in this country, all of our differences, not just the racial difference, is we have to promote understanding and forgiveness. That we can't hold people accountable. This was something that Jeremiah Wright said in the wake of 9/11.
The Dr. Hiroshima King, contents, the Nagasaki comments, the chickens coming home to roost.
All of those were way back. And one of the things that we have to see about the black church is that it stands in the thus saith the Lord prophetic tradition. You don't go to church necessarily to be comforted. You go to church basically to be challenged. And I'm a member of the same denominational as Jeremiah Wright. I wouldn't quite use the language that he used because I think in the South we speak about things a little different. I do think that was one of the things that did not happen. I think we had a Northern analysis of the race problem. I think the Southern analysis of the race problem, I think we have moved much further than they have in the North. We see progress. We see upward mobility economically. We see nicer homes. We are not still angry. In fact, in the South, you couldn't afford to be angry because you'd get killed. Mm. And I grew up in a neighborhood in New Orleans with an Irish grocery store on one corner, an Italian bar on the other, and the German-American Bund, where they were hiring Hitler, on the corner of my house. And my message was, you don't get mad, you get smart. You don't get angry with sick people, you understand them and help them. And I think that our nonviolent approach to the South, in the South, actually people are trying to make this campaign a post-race campaign. I think we went to the post-racial era with Martin Luther King's Poor People's Campaign 40 years ago in 1968, when we were no longer talking about race, but we made the shift to dealing with poverty.
That's a long time ago, and yet Barack Obama is still struggling to assert a post-racial profile emphasis today.
Well, I think the nation is, because it rejected Martin Luther King's shift to poverty. It was not the people who were coming to Washington with him in the Poor People's Campaign represented 23 different ethnic groups, including poor whites in North and South and Appalachia, including Native Americans, including five or six different Hispanic groups, the Puerto Rican, the Cuban, the Chicano, you know, I never knew there were so many different varieties of ethnic tribes.
And here we are in 2008 with those tribes still arrayed around Barack Obama as he stands at that podium yesterday. Let me turn to Anna Deavere Smith, if I may, for a moment. And Andrew Young, we're so glad to have you with us today from Atlanta. Anna Deavere Smith, what did you hear from that podium in Philadelphia yesterday? Did you hear history? Did you hear a new marker on the race conversation in this country? How did you hear Barack Obama?
Yes. Well, I think, and it's a real privilege to be on the air with Ambassador Young. You know, it caused me to go back and look at a speech that Robert Kennedy made right after King was shot in Indiana. And I compared two excerpts, if I may. Mm. As we know, yesterday when Barack Obama spoke, at a certain point he says, as referring to Reverend Wright's comments, as such, Reverend Wright's comments were not only wrong, but divisive at a time, and this word at a time is going to become more important as his speech goes on, at a time when we need unity, racially charged, at a time when we need to come together to solve a set of monumental problems, two wars, a terrorist threat, a falling economy, a chronic health care crisis, and potentially devastating climate change problems that are neither black or white or Latin or Asian, but rather problems that confront us all. Mm. And when you ask if he's, your first question to us was, is he pushing the conversation or our race issue along? I looked back at the rhetoric of Robert Kennedy in his famous speech, and he says this in asking people to think about what they're going to do in a fractious moment. He says, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. Because Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence, evidently, is that there were white people who were responsible. You can be filled with bitterness and with hatred and a desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country in greater polarization, black people against blacks and white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another, or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that has spread across our land with an effort to understand compassion and love.
A very familiar tone there, again in yesterday's.
Let me just quickly
say
please. What my point is that in his time, Kennedy was calling for understanding, compassion, and love. What Barack Obama is calling for is to come together to solve a set of monumental problems. Hmm. So I think he has moved us along in a rhetorical moment. Mm-hmm. He's actually calling for us to come together to solve a set of monumental problems, and that is a step, I think, forward from what my adult life has been dedicated to, which is understanding, compassion, and love. Mm.
On Point News analyst Jack Beatty joins us. Jack, does the time never change? Does the clock never move on race? Or did it move yesterday in this speech by Barack Obama?
I think it did. I found it a moving call for social empathy, you know, for whites to understand, if not forgive, the historical roots of the anger expressed by Reverend Wright, and for blacks to understand the economic and social roots of white resentment of what they see as special treatment for blacks. And as he set it up, these complementary and collective acts of social empathy really are the predicate for a biracial politics of remedy, a coalition beyond class, beyond race, based on the issues, economic issues, issues of social justice that join both races, that transcend all races. And he was saying, let's have this empathy, let's recognize that these forces are there, and then let's recognize the things that unite us, which are the problems we share in common.
A big moment. Ambassador Andrew Young in Atlanta, please stand by for just a minute. We've got to take a short break here. Anna Deavere Smith with us today from Phoenix, Arizona, and Jack Beatty, thanks for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Ambassador Andrew Young joins us today from Atlanta, former ambassador to the United Nations, also former mayor of Atlanta. He is now a political supporter of Hillary Rodham Clinton in her campaign for the Democratic nomination. Anna Deavere Smith joins us from Phoenix, Arizona, playwright and professor at NYU. She stepped in the course of her career into many voices, black and white and right across the American spectrum, also listening yesterday to Barack Obama's speech. And our own Jack Beatty's here. You can join the conversation. Can we settle down and look afresh at race when Obama's preacher's angry words still ring in the air? Is there a new honesty here, a new candor about race that the country can grab onto? Or do you hear politics, something profound or something passing? 800-423-8255 is our number, 800-423-TALK. Here is Barack Obama yesterday in Philadelphia saying, look, we can do more of the same or we can do something new.
For we have a choice in this country. We can accept a politics that breeds division and conflict and cynicism. We can tackle race only as spectacle, as we did in the OJ trial, or in the wake of tragedy, as we did in the aftermath of Katrina, or as fodder for the nightly news. We can play Reverend Wright's sermons on every channel, every day, and talk about them from now until the election, and make the only question in this campaign whether or not the American people think that I somehow believe or sympathize with his most offensive words. We can pounce on some gaffe by a Hillary supporter as evidence that she's playing the race card, or we can speculate on whether white men will all flock to John McCain in the general election regardless of his policies. We can do that. But if we do, I can tell you that in the next election, we'll be talking about some other distraction, and then another one, and then another one. And nothing will change.
Barack Obama in Philadelphia yesterday. Ambassador Young and Deavere Smith. Jack, I want to hear you on this, but let's go to our listeners as well. Sam is calling from Marshfield, Massachusetts. Sam, you're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, Tom. I think the American people, all the American people, should be given a chance to hear or see the whole speech.
It's out there.
In my opinion, it was the Gettysburg Address of the 21st century. As you know from a call or two a couple of years ago, I'm kind of proud of my ancestry, which includes the Lees of Virginia, including Richard Henry Lee. And perhaps my fellow citizens will find that perspective interesting when I say that Barack Obama sent chills up my spine yesterday, nearly brought me to tears. In my opinion, he addressed this nation's oldest fears, its present fears, our highest ideals, our hopes. He brings out our higher angels, and in case you hadn't guessed, I am for Barack Obama, and I have been all along. But yesterday just completely validated my feelings about him in the past. I think the right-wing radio talk show hosts are showing their true position as this nation's underbelly. And this man, Barack Obama, is offering himself to us to help bring this nation together and live at our highest ideals.
Did his preacher's comments give you pause, Sam? If they did, was that assuaged yesterday or not?
Well, you know, once again, though, we don't know the Reverend's whole feelings in context. I mean, once again, his thoughts are being excerpted and pulled out of context and pulled out of time. And certainly, the tradition in the African American churches of coming at you a little bit in your face, you know, most white Americans don't understand that. And so, yeah, I mean, his comments probably could have been put differently, and some of them are over the top, but that shouldn't be an issue. We shouldn't be diverted by that.
Sam, let me put it to Ambassador Andrew Young. Andy Young, you...
Can I just speak to it?
Yes.
That and let me use as an illustration. In 1966, Dr. King sent me down to Natchez, Mississippi, because there was a riot brewing. When I got there, the National Guard had machine guns on top of the airport. Everybody was armed all over the city. And I went to a church, and there were almost 1,000 young black people who were just angry and bitter and who wanted to die. They were frustrated. They didn't want, it was like the kids in Tiananmen Square. Mm. They didn't want compromise. Mm-hmm. And I sat there and listened to them, and then I had to get up and speak. I made Jeremiah Wright sound like an angel. I said everything that was frustrating them, and took about a half hour to do it. But when I got through, they quieted down and went home peacefully. Now, 2 days later in the New York Times, when they quoted what I said, oh, my God. See, but I was, I've been committed to nonviolence almost since I was a 4 years old. Mm. My father talked nonviolence to me. But I had to express the frustrations, the anger, the hatred, the legitimate hatred of people who were living under a very oppressive yoke. Now, you have to see Farrakhan and Jeremiah Wright in that context. Jeremiah Wright has a PhD in religion. Mm-hmm. He's an Old Testament scholar. But he knows that the Old Testament scholars, when they translated, my Old Testament professor said the prophets were not polite men. Mm. They rained down hell and damnation on Israel's sin. But it was to bring Israel to its senses. Now, you put that context along with what I was saying about the need. And I've done this on a number of occasions, that we had to go in and calm down people after the Watts riots, after the New York riots. Mm-hmm. In Chicago, we both calmed them down afterwards and prevented others. But in order to get control of a rabid crowd, you end up committing yourself or at least expressing their frustrations and their bitterness.
But a rabid crowd, this was Sunday morning in the church.
Oh, yeah, and you think that people don't bring a lot of anger with them from the frustrations of their employment in Chicago?
Right. Anna, what do you say there?
Well, yeah, I think that Barack Obama addressed this very well in his speech, and the part of it that he says that I think this is very creative when you say, does this speech push us along? Mm-hmm. And part of pushing us along is pushing us along in terms of how we think about things. Is he says that the most segregated hour in American life occurs on Sunday morning. Yeah. And he points out that the anger isn't always productive, but that it's real. And it, just as I think you might have been headed a moment ago, Ambassador Young, it's almost therapeutic, I would say. But then
exactly.
What's different about what Barack Obama is doing in this speech is he goes further to say that, in fact, a similar anger exists within segments of the white community. Most working and middle-class white Americans don't feel they are particularly privileged by their race. Their experience is the immigrant experience as far as they're concerned. No one's handed them anything. Just yesterday, I interviewed a Minuteman out here in Arizona.
The sort of citizen border patrol, yeah.
And he, you know, a volunteer border patrol. Mm-hmm. And he is, I would say that, you know, he would make Reverend Wright look, you know, as to use your words, Ambassador Young, like an angel. So that what I think the speech does too is to show us that these kinds of segregated hours occur all over our country, and in fact, they are therapeutic. The problem that we have now that's of great concern to me is in that the media takes these things out of context, out of the intimate environment in which they are created, in the intimate environment in which the leader is speaking, the pain and the passion of the people. And I agree with Ambassador Young as he says that people come into those churches, people go to Minutemen meetings with, in fact, and I'm not condoning any of the speech, but I'm saying people have real desires, real fears, real anxieties, and churches are often, and groups are often, a form of therapy. The danger in taking these things out of context, playing them over and over, playing them as clips that become new movies, new rhetorics, new poems, new speeches, and not truths, is that it does something that I think the speech I referred to of Robert Kennedy after the killing of Martin Luther King was also trying to do, was to guide us not to use our angers and our bitternesses and our hatreds as a way of continuing to tear us, ourselves apart. And I really feel that the media is doing that.
Let's let Barack Obama... Also, excuse me.
After Robert Kennedy made that speech, Indianapolis was one of the cities that did not burn. And Atlanta, people were out talking, and we had no burning. I think that you've got to see this as a necessary kind of leadership, and that we should take this as an opportunity to pull America together at a new level and not exploit it over and over again for election purposes.
We heard Obama trying
much too serious.
Indeed, and Obama trying to do just that yesterday. Let's listen to a couple of clips where we'll let him speak for himself for a moment, where he both speaks to Reverend Wright's comments, but then talks about his own standing and place within that community.
I have already condemned in unequivocal terms the statements of Reverend Wright that have caused such controversy and in some cases pain. For some, nagging questions remain. Did I know him to be an occasionally fierce critic of American domestic and foreign policy? Of course. Did I ever hear him make remarks that could be considered controversial while I sat in the church? Yes. Did I strongly disagree with many of his political views? Absolutely. Just as I'm sure many of you have heard remarks from your pastors, priests, or rabbis with which you strongly disagree.
And then Barack Obama spoke to his own place in the black community and in the bigger American community.
I can no more disown him than I can disown the black community. I can no more disown him than I can disown my white grandmother, a woman who helped raise me, a woman who sacrificed again and again for me, a woman who loves me as much as she loves anything in this world, but a woman who once confessed her fear of black men who passed her by on the street, and who on more than one occasion has uttered racial or ethnic stereotypes that made me cringe. These people are part of me, and they are part of America, this country that I love.
Jack Peedy here, Barack Obama again offering himself and his not unique, but very special heritage as a kind of embodiment of an America that goes across color lines.
Yes, and he's pointing to the offsetting, prejudices. The prejudice we heard when in Reverend Wright and from his grandmother. You know, the idea that I see that there's a therapeutic element in what Reverend Wright was doing. But Obama does speak of what he calls the ignorance of the black community. He says that straight out. And what
the
he means,
fierce intelligence and
ignorance. Mm-hmm. And by ignorance, he means the taking of paranoid stories for real. The taking of stories about the Iran-Contra affair that spread drugs, crack cocaine in America. The taking of stories about AIDS as a kind of white plot. That's not just African American. I mean, it created all sorts of havoc in South Africa. And I think I'm not sure that it's therapeutic to tell people things that aren't so. It seems to me therapy should orient people to reality.
That's black reality. I'm sort of with them on 2 out of 3. I mean, I don't think the AIDS thing has any merit, but there is a history of trying out the syphilis drugs in Tuskegee.
Yes.
And there is significant evidence that drugs came into the black community in California by way of the Iran-Contra. We can argue about that, but I think that I would say that those are things that are believable to the black community that somebody has to deal with, and that's what preachers do. Now, let me just go to Farrakhan because it gets more difficult. The people who quite often end up following Farrakhan are young men who have been put out of school, even though because they're restless, sometimes because they're too smart. Quite often they end up in jail. They don't have a father figure because our families were broken down, in a sense, by federal government policy that would not let a man remain in the house and wouldn't let the mother and grandmother stay in the same house if they received welfare.
Ambassador, I have to say just for a moment here, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. So from that, you say?
From that, I say that that Farrakhan has provided a framework of discipline that has made respectable citizens out of angry young men. And we should be grateful that they are on the corner in bow ties selling fruit and newspapers and not ravaging our communities with crime.
But Obama's being flayed because this church gave a Lifetime Achievement Award to Louis Farrakhan, and Farrakhan has been very fiery on many fronts, including, of course, Israel and the Palestinians.
No, Farrakhan has hardly been fiery on Israel for the last 10 years or so. And one of the reasons is that when Farrakhan came to Atlanta and I was mayor, I went to see him. And I sat down there and I listened to everything he said. And my presence there was not so much to support him, but to moderate what he was saying to my community. And I value my friendship with him, and because I think that we have to keep all of these elements of dissent rational and directed positively in our society. We don't do that by condemning them. We do that essentially by relating to them. Even the meeting with Gaddafi. Gaddafi has basically been brought in and has agreed to stop financing terrorism, largely because he was visited by Mandela. And then he was visited by President Obasanjo of Nigeria. Mm. And they appealed to him to stop supporting terrorism. And it was in that context that Farrakhan and Jeremiah Wright went to visit him. There was an attempt to stop this man from being a terrorist. Now, you might not like it, but that's a whole lot better than how we dealt with Saddam Hussein.
And maybe
much less expensive.
No question about that. And maybe this is the theme that Barack Obama is looking to raise, the flag he's looking to raise there in Philadelphia yesterday. Ambassador Andrew Young in Atlanta, Anna DeVere Smith in Phoenix, Arizona, Jack Beatty with me in the studio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Barack Obama and race in America, his big speech yesterday in Philadelphia. What did you think? Whatever happens in this campaign, was this a historic marker in American civic culture? Andrew Young is with us, former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., mayor of Atlanta, and a longtime ally of Dr. Martin Luther King. Anna Deavere Smith is with us from Phoenix, Arizona today, teaches at NYU's law school. She's professor and playwright. Jack Beatty's here in a moment. We'll be joined by Republican pollster Whit Ayers, but let's listen to a little more of Barack Obama. Here he was saying that if his preacher, Jeremiah Wright, was wrong, he was wrong because he didn't see the chance, the reality of change in this country.
It's that he spoke as if our society was static, as if no progress had been made, as if this country, a country that has made it possible for one of his own members to run for the highest office in the land and build a coalition of white and black, Latino, Asian, rich, poor, young, and old, is still irrevocably bound to a tragic past. What we know, what we have seen, is that America can change.
But Obama also warned that there is still anger and backlash and the exploitation of racial resentment out there.
Anger over welfare and affirmative action helped forge the Reagan coalition. Politicians routinely exploited fears of crime for their own electoral ends. Talk show hosts and conservative commentators built entire careers unmasking bogus claims of racism while dismissing legitimate discussions of racial injustice and inequality as mere political correctness or reverse racism.
Barack Obama on the stump yesterday. Whit Ayers joins us from Alexandria, Virginia. He's a Republican pollster, president of Ayers, McHenry & Associates. Whit Ayers, thanks for being here.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine. How do you think this speech, Barack Obama's appeal, is going to play in Republican quarters?
Well, as you might imagine, Tom, my perspective on the speech is a little different from those of your other guests. I thought it was a beautifully crafted, wonderfully eloquent speech like we've come to expect from Barack Obama. But it will do little or nothing to quell the controversy that has surrounded him with Jeremiah Wright's sermons. No reasonable person holds a political candidate responsible for all the comments that might be made by one of their wacky supporters. That's not the problem here. The problem here is that Barack Obama and Jeremiah Wright have had a long and incredibly close relationship for 20 years. And the message of the Barack Obama campaign of unity and bringing us together is directly contradicted by the fundamental message of Jeremiah Wright, repeated over and over and over and over again over 20 years. Let's say the tables are turned. Let's say that John McCain has a long and close 20-year relationship with a minister and a church that gave a Lifetime Achievement Award to David Duke. Let's just imagine the kinds of questions that would be raised about John McCain and a church that gave a Lifetime Achievement Award to David Duke, like Barack Obama's church gave a Lifetime Achievement Award to Louis Farrakhan. We would be peppered with comments. Mr. McCain, did you know they were going to give that award? Mr. McCain, did you try to stop it? Mr. McCain, once they gave that award to that racist hate monger, why did you go back into the doors of that church even one more time?
Ambassador Young, is it a fair reversal?
What's that?
I'm asking Ambassador Andrew Young in Atlanta if that's a fair reversal.
It is and it isn't. I think it's a fair and it's a very accurate analysis. And I agree that that's the way this is going to be understood. I would still say that, let me put it back to the Huey Long days. If there was a Southern demagogue like Huey Long that was expressing the frustrations of people, I would say that would be an apt comparison. The reason I wouldn't say David Duke is that David Duke has been associated with Ku Klux Klan violence. Now, let me say that when we put together our poverty program here in Atlanta, we made sure that Calvin Craig of the Ku Klux Klan was on the executive committee. So my philosophy of inclusion includes the Ku Klux Klan. And when the Ku Klux Klan picketed outside the Georgia legislature, when Jimmy Carter put up Martin Luther King's portrait, I was out there protecting the Ku Klux Klan's right to march. But I can't equate those. Now, maybe it's my limitation of my experience. I understand too well, and I'm a member of the United Church of Christ, and it is a prophetic tradition. I was looking at John Adams on HBO last night, and he was one of the founding members of the Church of United Church of Christ, and he was a rabble rouser in the early days of independence against the British, and some of the things that they said about the British are the tradition of our church. We condemn slavery. We have been in the forefront of accepting and being non-judgmental about people who are gay. And that's a radical position in America today, one that the Republican Party doesn't embrace publicly. But it's one that I think is necessary for the message of tolerance and forgiveness and understanding is essential to the survival of a multicultural democracy.
Can I say something about that, Tom?
Please, Anna Deavere Smith.
Yeah, because back to the clip, the previous clip that started with "I can no more disown him than I can disown the black community, no more than I can disown my grandmother." It made me think of two things. One is that I think when anybody runs for president, they have a many moments in which they have to detach themselves from things that may have been dear to them in the past in order to fulfill something Cokie Roberts once said to me, the romance that they're going to have with the American people. And that must be a very painful experience. But the other thing that comes to mind to me in that part of this is that what Barack Obama is talking about, even as his speech begins with a more perfect union, is we are not perfect. I can't disown myself from these things that are not perfect. Mm-hmm. These people are part of me. They're part of America. He goes on to say, this country that I love. And I think that's a very difficult thing for all of us at this moment in American history and in technology. That is to say that we are not perfect and that it is not perfect and that part of making it perfect is to acknowledge that which is not perfect. And I would dare say that every candidate is going to have the opportunity to have to struggle with that.
Whittiers, let me ask you, it's easy to see the video of Jeremiah Wright as a big, juicy political softball. You can frame those up and make hay on those politically till the cows come home. But as a Republican American looking at this candidate, do you or might not Republicans also see a rare opportunity? A man who can you know, even with that association, reach out with this equanimity that Anna Deavere Smith is describing, an opportunity for this country on race.
There's no question that Barack Obama is an extraordinarily talented political candidate, but he's also a political candidate about whom we know relatively little compared to people like Hillary Clinton or John McCain. And so anything that opens a door into who he really is and what he really thinks is enlightening. The problem for Barack Obama is that the David Duke analogy with Louis Farrakhan is indeed exactly accurate. I mean, Louis Farrakhan is a guy who talked about white people being potential humans. They haven't evolved yet. Or talking about Jews as satanic forces. I mean, he's a racist hate monger, just like David Duke is a racist hate monger. And Barack Obama seemed perfectly comfortable in a church that gave Louis Farrakhan a Lifetime Achievement Award. He went back to that church time and time and time again after that award was given. There's something very troubling there. And there's something that tells us something about Barack Obama that we haven't seen before and that he's going to need to answer. And the problem with the speech is that he never addressed that fundamental contradiction. And I think this is not going to go away until he does address that in some satisfactory way.
Whittiers, Republican pollster, thanks for joining us. Thank you very much for being here. Ambassador Young?
Yeah. One of the reasons why I support Hillary Clinton is that I have known her for 30 years. And she's been through all of this kind of testing and rigorous evaluation and condemnation and come through it. But let me say that I had the same problem with Ronald Reagan when he went to Philadelphia, Mississippi, where three civil rights workers were killed and made a states' rights speech. That was him committing the Republican Party to violence and racism, in my understanding. Now, I learned that Ronald Reagan could grow and that he could respond to the political climate, and Ronald Reagan ended up making Martin Luther King's birthday a national holiday and finally signing a sanctions ordinance against South African apartheid. But the black community is used to working with an imperfect union. and we want to get somebody. First place, we are anybody that criticizes this country, and I'm one of those critics. But there's no place in the world I would live other than the United States of America. There's no place I could go and criticize the country like I can criticize my country here.
Can I just also say something quickly about that, Ambassador Young, what you just said about African Americans' willingness to work with the imperfect union? In terms of this speech, as is it, you know, historic or not, it also made me think about Barbara Jordan in her speech at the time of the quest for Nixon's impeachment. And that, too, was a great American speech trying to work with the less-than-perfect union. As a person who studies language and studies speaking, I think that these speeches, these race speeches that we've had in our country, are beautiful literature, and there's a lot of feeling in them, particularly because it is an attempt in words to deal with that which is less than perfect. And I think that, you know, in terms of looking at Barack Obama's speech, you know, is it historic or not? It's too soon to tell. But the work he's trying to do there is in that tradition that Ambassador Young is speaking about in language, the tradition of dealing with a less than perfect union.
Let's hear once more from Barack Obama's speech yesterday on just this front.
The fact is that the comments that have been made and the issues that have surfaced over the last few weeks reflect the complexities of race in this country that we've never really worked through, a part of our union that we have not yet made perfect. And if we walk away now, if we simply retreat into our respective corners, we will never be able to come together and solve challenges like health care or education or the need to find good jobs for every American.
If we walk away now, says Barack Obama. Let's take a call from Ray in Boston. Ray, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. This is Ray Hammond. Good to catch up with
you. It's great to have you.
Disclaimer very quickly. Jeremiah Wright's my cousin, and I've not really proclaimed for either candidate, but I think in the wake of the speech, I would say very much yesterday, Obama was on trial. To some extent today, I think the nation is on trial. I thought his speech really address the issue. I agree with Ambassador Young. People are going to make political hay out of it, but it's the same hay that I think, for example, the Republican Party has to answer for around its dalliance with Bob Jones University or South Africa.
So how is the nation on trial then today, Ray Hammond?
Well, on trial in the sense that I think he really did bring home several things. This is an institutional issue that we have to address. We have to address our isolation one for another, the astonishing surprise of the white community over the black preaching tradition is, I think, leaving a lot of people in the black community scratching their heads. I think he made it very personal. All of us have pastors and rabbis. All of us have family members who we love and work with, who we know have real deep-seated prejudice and discrimination. And we have to love them and disagree with them and yet work with them. And the question is whether we will do that as a nation or whether we will continue to use this for political advantage and in the and sell out our long-term possibilities.
Ray Hammond, our time is short. We're grateful for your call. Thanks so much. Jack Beatty, a marker in history laid down yesterday, or something flash in the pan campaign-wise here?
Well, I think it does them a power of good in the campaign. This is aimed at superdelegates, and this is the symphony that Democratic superdelegates love. I think this is going to me, I think that this makes it a lock on his getting that the majority of the superdelegates. But in terms of American history, I think this is a moment, and this is, I don't want to make it seem bigger than it is, in what Robert Beller called America's civil religion. The moments when presidents, leaders, Martin Luther King, Abraham Lincoln, speak about the character of the country. They look at the soul of the country. We commemorate our losses. We aspire to our the better angels of our nature. We do it in public. We do it collectively. And these speeches, these moments constitute our civil religion. And I think he made a contribution to this yesterday in the candor and honesty and complexity of what he was saying. So I do think it's a historic speech.
Ambassador Young, our time is short, but 40 years after Dr. King, how do you imagine Martin Luther King would have heard that speech?
He would have been extremely proud of him, but I don't think it's a marker for the superdelegates. I think that what Ayers said is going to have to be considered by the superdelegates. I think we have not been able to deal with the constant clash of negativity that comes from the right wing. This is just the beginning, I'm afraid.
As if we wouldn't have it around Hillary as well in another context?
No, but you'd know it around Hillary. Everything they know about her has already been dragged out.
It's been wonderful to have you all. Ambassador Andrew Young, former mayor of Atlanta, thank you very much for joining our conversation today from Atlanta.
Thank you for this level of conversation.
Anna Deavere Smith, it's been too long. We hope to have you again. Thank you very much for joining us from Phoenix today.
Thank you.
Jack Beatty, good to have you.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.